Welcome to Work of Art, the Mason Gross podcast, produced out of Rutgers University's Mason Gross School of the Arts in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We are a community of nearly 1,200 undergrad and graduate dancers, musicians, theater artists, filmmakers, and visual artists from around the globe. My name is Laurie Granieri, and I'll be sitting down with some of these artists, discussing what fuels their curiosity, their passion, and their impulse to make. Today, our guests are recent filmmaking alum Andrea Pfaff and current BFA film student Sam Spencer. Pfaff and Spencer are part of the creative team that made the recently released documentary Dance and Parkinson's. You can view the documentary on the Mason Gross School YouTube page. The film focuses on a movement program that the Mason Gross Dance Department, in partnership with the New Jersey Parkinson's Disease Information and Referral Center at Robert Wood Johnson University Hospital, offers free of charge to people with Parkinson's disease. Parkinson's is a degenerative disorder of the central nervous system with no known cause. Parkinson's can cause stiffness, shaking, slow movement, and balance issues. The film, a production of the Documentary Film Lab, which is part of the Rutgers Filmmaking Center here at Mason Gross, is only 5 minutes long, but it still manages to do what all great art does: change the viewer, leave a residue, rearrange the furniture in your mind. Pfaff, in the role of cinematographer, and Spencer as an editor, along with their fellow students and Thomas Lennon, head of the film lab, step into the lives of people coping with Parkinson's and find not merely the limitations illness can impose, but the joy and grit that members of the dance class embody, movement by movement, moment by moment. Dance in Parkinson's refuses to stir our pity, but instead demands that we see and recognize its subjects and their grace. Great. Well, Andrea and Sam, thank you so much for being here to talk about dance and Parkinson's. You know, I'm really interested to know, to get a sense of what you knew about Parkinson's before you started making the film. Sam, I'll start with you. What was your knowledge of the disease, if anything, before you started editing?
Yeah, Parkinson's wasn't something I was entirely familiar with. I've heard of it in the past, but I didn't really know what it entailed. So a lot of what I learned about Parkinson's was through the film and through editing the film, so I was grateful for that experience.
What about you, Andrea? Had you had any family members who'd had Parkinson's, or what was your understanding?
Not any family members, but some family friends that I knew growing up, but definitely most of my knowledge was sort of like textbook science classes, and there was none of the personal element to it.
You know, this is such an intimate look at these people's lives. I know you spent a lot of time with them, Andrea. What was it like for you to enter their homes, and how did you form relationships with them? They're a lot older than you are, too.
Yeah. I mean, it was definitely uncomfortable and difficult at first because you felt like you were intruding on their lives, and, you know, there was, not that they conveyed you were unwelcome, but you just sort of feel a sense of guilt when you're coming into somebody's life to sort of like grab this story and go. So, you know, you have to consciously not do that. You know, you form a relationship with this person, you spend time with them on and off camera, and you develop that friendship and that relationship with them, because ultimately it's better for you when you're even, you know, I didn't edit this, but when you're editing your own project, having all that backstory is helpful. And more than that, you know, these are incredible people. And it was a joy for me to get to know them and become, you know, closer and even friends with some of them. Yeah.
Sam, as an editor, you're so closely linked with the shape of the story, right? One edit could completely change the tone of a piece, I imagine. So what was the story that you wanted to tell as you were working on this?
Well, there was just so much content. When we picked up the piece, there was hours and hours of footage, and we were trying to tell any story we could that just like made the most sense. We really wanted it to move people, and we had multiple edits that got cut originally, like talking more about their caregivers and stuff like that. And then as we continued editing, things just kind of dropped out of the edit, and it eventually kind of just shaped itself. Like we edited the film, and then it spoke back to us, and then we just kept working from there.
I love that. It spoke back to us. Talk to me a little bit more about that.
Right. I mean, I realize it when I edit any film, really. It's you make an edit, and you watch it back, and the film will tell you if it's working or not. It'll say, like, oh, you should cut this out, or maybe add more of this. This is good. So we just really listened to that and went with our intuition with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like it's very much of a gut check.
Right,
as you go through. So you had hours and hours to go through. So you saw everyone's story basically from start to finish.
Right.
The raw. What were some of the most affecting things that you remember, the things that left an impression on you?
It's hard to decipher just like one in particular, because like I said, there were so many things, but I think something that stuck with me was I think it was Anne and her relationship to her caregiver, and how they were, she kind of lost a lot of people in her life, like her husband, and her relationship with her caregiver was so strong. And she talked about how like her caregiver would tuck her in at night and like give her a kiss, and I don't know, it's just really sweet to hear that there's people out there that are willing to put all that time in to make someone feel comfortable.
Absolutely. I'm wondering, Andrea, in the time that you spent it with Anne or with...
Primarily with Anne, but also with Pat Bach.
Okay. I mean, you're both relatively young. How did it change your perception, if at all, or make you think about aging? I can imagine that's not something that's in the front of your minds right now.
I think for me, both Anne and Pat Bach, just they have such spunk, I think is how Thomas liked to put it. But I mean, it's true, they had wonderful just like a vibrance and excitement about life, and talking to me about the things they enjoy doing, you know, even though the reason I was there was primarily to talk about, you know, how difficult their lives have become since developing Parkinson's. So it was, you know, it was an inspiration to think about, you know, these people have really taken hold of their lives and are living them and enjoying them, every moment of them, despite, you know, the difficulties that come, and them reminiscing about their past, but even looking forward to the future and telling me about, you know, their grandkids or their children when they're coming over, and just all these exciting things for them. They were still living life. They hadn't let go of the excitement that life can offer.
What about you, Sam? Does aging scare you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm about to turn 23, and I think as the years go on, I'm like a little bit nervous about it, but I think like Andrea said, like they had such light in their eyes and they were so excited about everything. And I remember one thing that made me really excited was that we went for a reshoot, and we went to Anne's house, and she was showing off her exercise routine and how she can do like minute planks and stuff like that. And I was like, you know what, maybe this isn't so bad. Like she's still moving around, she's still working out. So I guess it kind of romanticized it for me a little bit.
Right. It reminds me of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, in the gym. And it's exciting to know even people who have these challenges are still trying to figure it out, right? They're still living.
Yeah.
And there's still a way to live, even if you're compromised sometimes. I'm wondering, too, let's talk a little bit about dance and movement. How did this affect your perception of what dance is? I'll start with you, Andrea.
So I didn't get to spend as much time at the dance classes as I would have liked, but I was out with them on like the original scoping mission to sort of see, which actually was nice because I didn't have to worry about all the camera stuff. I really could get to see what was happening. And it's, you know, it broadened my perspective of dance. It's more than an art form. It's sort of a lifestyle for these people. Not just the instructors, but the clients who come to the classes. You know, it changes their life, and it's wonderful to see. So it's my perspective on dance. Just, I think it mostly the ways that it can be incorporated into your life to bring joy to yourself and those around you. I mean, Pat Bach would talk about how even when there wasn't the class, she had her like jazzercise dance tapes that she'd put on, and she'd just dance in the living room, and her husband would come dance with her. The two of them were a giggle. They were so funny. And they were just like, yeah, we'll just party it up in the living room and dance the night away. So it really, the ways that it can shape their life is incredible.
Yeah, and I totally agree with that. Even just watching back, like some of the interviews, you could see how they are maybe more stiff, but then when you watch the footage of them dancing, there's more of a flow. And you realize how much it really does impact their physical health. And I didn't know much about dance before this either, but now, I like Andrea said, I think it really did broaden my my stance on it. So I do think it's a lifestyle as well.
At one point, one of the people in the class says something so moving, and I wasn't sure if she said thick or sick, but it both work. She says, you take on the sick role in society. And I keep hearing it as thick too, but often people who are sick are treated like they're thick, right? Yeah. Like they're slow, like they're less than. And I can imagine that's so humbling. I love that you had that line in there. What made you want to highlight that among many other things, Sam, as you edited?
That mostly came from just their perspective on their whole disease. They, like I said, a lot of them are ashamed by it, and they're embarrassed. And like she said, she takes on the sick role, so she's walking around, and everyone's like, "Oh, like there's a sick old woman or something like that." So they feel uncomfortable by it, and I just wanted to highlight that they're not any less than or slower than. They're just a little bit different.
One thing that I really loved about your choices too is that we see a lot of movement outside of the dance class. So it's not just someone sitting on a couch and talking, right? But you're seeing them move around their kitchens and navigate their everyday lives. And I thought that was really powerful, because really just seeing the movement alone and their motor skills communicates, at least to me, communicated so much. I'm really interested in the musical choices. I wasn't sure if the music was the ambient music that was being used in the classroom, or if these were musical choices that you all made.
I think it's actually both. So it's we had a list of the music that they played during the class. And then as the editors, we kind of like went through all the music and then kind of picked ones that we thought would fit each chapter of the film. So we kind of like listened to all the songs and we're like, hey, this is more fun. This is more moving. This is a little sadder. So it was the music in the classes, but we kind of transferred it to the right moments.
Yeah, it was really powerful. Roy Orbison and Barry Manilow, and I think you opened with Aretha, right?
Yeah,
just really, really made a lot of sense. It really added a lot, I thought. What was your greatest challenge in telling this story?
I think you don't want to leave anything out. And on like a sort of gathering footage side of that, that's a huge challenge. When you're, like I said earlier, you know, you don't want to be there to just grab the story and go. You really want to get a good look at this person's entire life and not, you know, just their disease and how it relates to the dance, which was a lot of the reason we decided to enter their homes in the first place, of course, with them being willing to come alongside us and do that. So the challenge is not missing anything and, you know, giving to your editors everything. You don't want to leave your editors in the room like, oh, I wish I had this moment. And a lot of my stuff, you know, I'm, you know, do it from start to finish, where I film and then I edit, and, you know, I have that conversation with myself back and forth. But when you're responsible for filming and then handing it off to an editor, you want to, you know, give your editors the best chance they got. So you need to be out there capturing everything and not missing anything, which meant, you know, a lot of reshoots. And they had to even go back and do more reshoots. So we didn't get it perfect, but, you know, we did the best we can to sort of encapsulate this person's entire life from, you know, waking up to going to sleep at night, you know, trying to be there for all the important moments that they want to share with you.
It's humbling to see how difficult certain tasks are that you don't even think of, you know, you don't even think twice about. What were some of the tasks that you saw that were challenging for the people you spoke with?
Every time I went over to Anne's house, she insisted on making me a cup of tea, which I appreciate because I love tea. But, you know, just filling up the cup and getting it on, you know, in the microwave and dunking the tea, like, it, she was happy to do it and wanted to do it. It wasn't that, you know, this was like a burden for her. She was more than happy to, but it was challenging. And, you know, you have to think about, you know, that's such a simple thing for us to fill up a cup of water and put it in the microwave and press those buttons on the microwave, but that's a big challenge for her. And then there's other things that you would assume that she wouldn't be able to do, like painting, that she does all the time. And she's won painting competitions and submitted her art to festivals and things because, you know, she has a special technique with the way that her hands move. So it's like, it's a balance of things that you think she should be able to do is difficult, but other things that you would just assume she couldn't. Like, she does crosswords puzzles in the New York Times, and it's difficult, but she persists and she does them. So it was really fascinating to get to talk with her about all of those things and the things she can and can't do anymore.
That's got to leave an impression on you.
Absolutely, yeah.
Seeing that, sure. Sam, you know, I'm so interested in the role of the editor. At least my idea of it, which may be a little naive, is an editor, you know, sitting in the dark, yeah, alone with all this footage and kind of having his or her own relationship with the footage. Talk to me about what it really is like and why you love that, why you would rather be that guy than what Andrea did, which is perhaps more sociable.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's a really long process. And like I said, there was hours of footage. So primarily in the class, we would, there was three editors, and we would we each tackled a different person. It was all organized for us. And we would watch the footage, listen to the interviews, and log it all. Anne says this here, this could be a good ender, this is pretty moving. And it's just long lists of, and a lot of work, and it's not the most fun all the time, but near the end when you're really shaping the story and you kind of like fall in love with these people, it really just like, you have a real sense of accomplishment. So it just feels really satisfying to me.
It's experiences we have these days that you have that delayed gratification, right? And I would imagine you need to have a ton of patience,
right?
And you know, it's kind of like being a scribe or something, right? How are you able to have that patience, says a person who doesn't have it?
Well, this is the first time I've ever done anything like this, so I'm used to shooting my own stuff and editing my own stuff. So this was the first time I've just gone in kind of blind and not knowing what I'm going to get. So I think it was just the excitement of it all was what kind of allowed me to be patient, because I was looking forward to the finished product. So maybe if I do it again, maybe it'll be a little bit more challenging because I understand the work that's going to be put in. But I thought it was really a blast. Yeah.
To be in service to a client, that's a lot different, I imagine, or maybe it isn't, talk to me about that, than it is to just be, you know, realizing your own vision on your own time. And you know, you had Jeff Friedman from the dance department, who I'm sure had very strong feelings about how it should go, and you had Pamela Quinn. So you had, you know, you had people to satisfy with this. What was that like working for a client?
So typically I actually, you know, make science films where I'm doing a lot of like talking with a scientist about what they want to be expressed. So it wasn't totally foreign to me, but I think this was a little different in that the people, it was actually really great working with these particular clients because they were also artists and they understood that, you know, giving us specific guidelines on what they wanted, they were happy to do that, but they were also happy to step back and, you know, give us free rein, which I think made a lot of the difference. And, you know, because we were able to talk about it. We had a lot of meetings with Jeff right at the beginning about, you know, this is what we think would be moving. Can we make this work? Can we, you know, contact them personally and go into their homes? And it was a lot of back and forth. And I mean, any client work is like that. It's a lot of back and forth. And ultimately, you want to make your client a collaborator artistically in the piece rather than just, you know, handed down on high from, you know, what they want you to do. So it depends on the client. But these particularly, I don't know how much you guys worked with them, Sam, but they were very happy to, you know, allow us to do what we thought was best. And I think it worked in the end.
Are different because not all the edits are just initiated by you, right, Sam?
Right.
You're getting them from other people. So,
yeah. I mean, I wasn't too involved with the collaborators. I kind of felt like we were in our own little world, but they were always in the back of my head, and like any piece, at least for me, I want people to enjoy it and have a good time, so I wanted to make sure that everyone felt well represented and they liked the work. So that was always in the back of my head, but I never really talked to any of the collaborators.
Thomas Lennon, the head of the Documentary Film Lab, was kind of overseeing the project with you, and of course he's won multiple Oscars for making documentaries. What did you learn from him in this process?
I mean, Thomas was great. Thomas, before he even came on staff, I was talking with Patrick, who is the chair of the film program, and you know, he's like, just wait till you meet him. You're going to love him, Andrea. He's great. He is. And I think he brings a really practical side to our education here, which I appreciate. And, you know, theory is important. It's necessary. You need it to become a good filmmaker. But so Thomas brings that down-to-earth deadlines. Things need to get done. His line is everybody needs to be a producer. Doesn't matter if you're not a producer. Everybody needs to be a producer because you need to know what it is to work in the real world and get things done and handed to people on time. And I appreciated that from him. And he taught us a lot of practical skills, you know, even just about filming, and brought in people that he knew from the industry that was really great. So I think he brought a very down-to-earth perspective. Even if his expectations were high, he, you know, he helped us get there.
What about you, Sam?
In terms of editing, he was extremely helpful for me because documentary is something that I am looking to do more of. And he did this analogy where he talked about how a film is similar to a slalom course, like when you ski, and how you're going downhill and you have to build momentum. But then you have to, you know what a slalom course is? You go around the cones and then you got to slow down, shift direction, and then speed up again until you make it to the bottom. So a story is all about momentum and changing directions, and he taught me that, and it like really changed my perspective on how to edit like a documentary, and I was so grateful for that. So I was really appreciative.
Thank you both. I'm really grateful that you took the time to talk about this experience.